We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. I'm just recording a quick but important addendum to my forthcoming interview with Grandmaster Christian Carrilla. We talk about a lot of topics in our interview, wide-ranging chess conversation, but one of the topics we discuss about an hour in is the allegations of sexual assault against Grandmaster Alejandro Ramirez. Obviously, it's an extremely disturbing story. I just wanted to clarify that my interview with Grandmaster Carrilla was recorded on February 28th, 2023. I'm recording this addendum on March 9th, 2023. So we knew some details about the extent of the allegations at the time that we recorded, but not nearly as many as have come forth due to the March 7th article in the Wall Street Journal by Andrew Beaton and Joshua Robinson that reports that 10 women have come forward with allegations against Grandmaster Ramirez, including three underage girls. There's allegations of assault. It's an immensely disturbing story with lots of horrifying details. Grandmaster Ramirez has stepped down as the coach of the St. Louis chess team and from his role at the St. Louis Chess Club. But it's just extremely troubling, the extent of the allegations and the fact that people have been trying to get this addressed for years. They've been notifying the St. Louis Chess Club, the U.S. Chess Federation for years. And not only was the investigation, to the extent it was being investigated, proceeding at a snail's pace, but to make things much worse, in 2022, Grandmaster Ramirez was still sent to coach the U.S. women's team at the Olympiad. Just unconscionable, inexplicable. It's just really aggravating. I don't know what else to say. But I did just want to clarify that we did not have all that information at the time we recorded it. I'm sure that I will be covering this story more and covering the general issue of misogyny and making sure that the chess world is a much safer space for all people, but especially for women and girls. I'm sure it'll be covering it on future episodes. And I'm sure that Christian on the C-Squared podcast at some point will be saying more, but did just want to clarify that when we recorded on February 28th, all this information had not yet been reported. So that's kind of all I had to say right now about that, but my heart goes out to the victims. The chess world just has to do much, much better. So I would leave it at that and get you to my interview with Grandmaster Christian Carrilla. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. Before we introduce our illustrious guest, just wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. Number one, of course, Chessable, the leading chess education platform. We are recording this here in the last day of February, but this will be released in March when there's lots of stuff coming from Chessable, including a new course by a certain Levi Rosman, Simon Williams, Daniel King, my friend Grandmaster Eugene Perelstein all have different opening courses out. And of course, whatever aspect of your game you want to work on, Chessable has something for you. Also wanted to give a shout out to Aim Chess. Of course, Aim Chess is a great way to review your online games. It automatically gets the games from chess.com and Lee Chess and tells you stuff to work on, shows you tactics you missed. If you check out Aim Chess, be sure to use the code PERPETUAL30 to save 30% on a trial. And let's get to our return guest. He was a Romanian youth champion and the 2007 World Youth Champion under age 16, winner of the 2018 National Open, popular St. Louis Chess Club commentator. He's coach of the Missouri University chess team. And of course, he worked on his friend Grandmaster Fabiano Caruana's World Championship team in 2018. And perhaps most importantly these days, he's the co-host of the C Squared podcast with Fabiano Caruana. He's a return guest. We talked about his background way back in 2017 when the C Squared podcast was just a twinkle in his eye. But now we are glad to welcome back to the show Grandmaster Christian Carilla. Welcome, Christian.
Wow, that's a very professional introduction. Thank you very much, Ben. It's a great pleasure to be back once again on the best chess podcast out there, Perpetual Chess.
Oh, don't be silly. Now we're going to have to have a flatter off. But thank you. I mean, I've got a lot of reps in on the podcast, but I absolutely love C Squared. It's just such a welcome addition. And you guys, you're raising the bar in a lot of respects. So much respect. So let's dive into the pod. I mean, we've got a lot of topics to discuss, Christian, because your hand is in so many sort of stews in the chess world. But so you guys started this podcast, and I know you've talked a bit about the genesis behind it. It's something you've wanted to do for a while. What has surprised you about actually doing it as opposed to when you guys were brainstorming it?
So we started, I think, talking about it sometimes in May. I had ideas. Fabi, for example, was never super active on social media. Neither was I. But I feel like he has such a big voice in the world of chess. I felt that he should probably do something, and I've talked about these type of topics with him in the past as well, during the World Championship match preparation. Even after that, we continued working through 2019 as well. So we were always discussing these type of ideas, but then the pandemic came, and 2020, 2022 is sort of a blur, and I tried my hand at streaming. But streaming is such a tough business, mostly because you have to be always in front of your PC. And I'm traveling a lot with, as you mentioned, the commentary. That was the big one. And as that returned, the Grand Chess Tour returned, the tournaments at the St. Louis Chess Club returned, and I didn't have to stay as much in the house, streaming became kind of a very, very difficult thing to do. Podcasting. Obviously, I've been listening to your podcast for a very long time. You've been doing it for so many years. You were one of the trailblazers, if you want to put it that way, in the world of chess podcasting. And I feel, even to this day, I feel like we still haven't tapped into the market yet, the market of chess podcasting. I still were very, very early. And I felt that as I was discussing it with Fabiano as well in May 2022, that's when we kind of seriously started talking about it. I think it was one of the tournaments in Romania, the Grand Chess Tour in Romania, where we're just having some breakfast and started discussing about this idea. And I was mentioning the idea of starting a podcast, and I invited him. I told him that, look, I feel you have a voice. You've showed it during the World Championship match between Nepo and the Nepo and Magnus match. He did great. He got a lot of positive feedback, and I feel that was kind of a driving force for him as well to start thinking in this direction. That's kind of how it started. As to what the most difficult thing in the first few months, because we're only like 5 or 6 months old at this point, it was just the logistics. The logistics are so difficult, especially we had this vision of doing a very visual heavy podcast.
Yeah.
With a bunch of cameras, very well suited for YouTube. That was kind of our initial vision. And so we had to get the materials. First of all, get the cameras, get the microphones, get everything that goes, the lights as well, everything that kind of goes into a podcast, into the creation and direction of a podcast. And then with a very limited team, it's me, Fabi, and occasionally my fiance, who acts as a producer as well. Now we have some editors as well, but putting that team together and moving through the initial phase and the logistics of it, carrying all the materials and equipment from place to place, setting up in between rounds sometimes a podcast. And you know, this is also not very easy for Fabi, who is still very much one of the best chess players out there, and he has to balance all these things. And I try to keep that in mind, you know, and not put too much weight, too much production and logistic weight on him as much as possible. But yeah, those were the big problems at the beginning, just kind of understanding how everything works, the equipment work, transporting things from one place to the other, setting them up, because that takes a while as well. We got very proficient at it. I think nowadays we can set up like a podcasting scene, let's say, in more or less 30 minutes or so, which is, in the first couple of times, it took us like 1-2 hours. And that with having professionals with us, like my fiance used to work in production. So she knows her stuff, but still, all of these things were new to myself, to Fabi, and to some extent to the other part of our team as well.
Well, it's super impressive, and the chess world certainly appreciates your dedication, Christian. But so let's take us behind the scenes a little bit, because that already surprised me about, I mean, obviously, I it's clear that you're putting a lot into the visual production of the podcast, but I wasn't sure if you had like a permanent studio. And I'm also curious, like where, like, obviously, sometimes you guys are on the road, so sometimes circumstances change. But when you're in that nice big room with the chess set up, where are you guys doing that?
Which one? Which big room? give me the guess.
That, like Maurice, that I think?
Maurice was done at the Chase Hotel.
Okay.
So that was in my hotel room during the, I think that was after the U.S. Championship, or perhaps in the middle of the U.S. Championship. I think it was actually in the middle of the U.S. Championship. Maurice came in town, and we decided to have him on. Hikaru, maybe that's one of the ones that you were thinking about. That was actually done at Eric Rosen's house. you can see that Eric Rosen is also having the same background and the same scene in that one. So we've been finding places to shoot. It's a traveling podcast. We don't have currently a studio set up, but maybe in the future, and that's kind of the plan. We're going to try to do something so that we're a bit more centered when we have guests in St. Louis, and probably it's going to be St. Louis as the base, because that's where Fabi lives. A lot of potential guests also come around very often for the tournaments, so that's probably the best place. But for the moment, it's kind of a traveling podcast.
Makes sense. Okay. Well, I mean, I've watched nearly every episode, and there's so many standouts. I mean, Maurice and Hikaru, obviously being two of them, really enjoyed Levy Rosman. Levon.
Yeah, Levy was in LA.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All over the place
during the fight. Now, let me ask you, I mean, what you allude to with all these equipment, all this camera, like that stuff is expensive. I mean, as someone who this is my profession, so I certainly know that, you know, the production can be expensive, and also like it's not necessarily like you don't necessarily get rich from a podcast. Right. So how did you guys approach, like, you're putting all this into it? Has that been daunting for you guys?
I wouldn't say it's daunting. We understood early on that we're probably going to have some expenses. Those expenses, especially after the equipment is done, have been leveled out right now. We don't have as many things that we need to spend money on. Obviously, we need an editor. I sometimes do the edit, but we usually hire some people as well. but those expenses are usually taken care of right now, the business. So yeah, we understood there's going to be some expenses in the beginning, but we also want to do this long term. We don't know what the possibilities are in terms of this being a business venture, but this is the way we look at it. We also want to produce content for Chess World. We want to put forward the stories of chess players, as you do as well, and as you've been doing a great job with that as well. So you were an inspiration at the beginning for sure. So yeah, that's kind of the vision behind it. But yeah, financially, we understood it's going to be a strain at the beginning, but we took the leap.
Nice. Appreciated once again. And yeah, if I've learned anything in the 6 years I've been doing it, is that the chess world has infinite stories. There's mm-hmm. always more stories. There's always more compelling guests. I mean, I certainly feel like I can never get to everyone that I would like to speak with. And obviously, you guys with the reach that you have, like, must feel that even more. So Christian, we got a question from a supporter of Perpetual Chess, who you've probably met in St. Louis at some point. It is from chess reporter Chris Wainscott, who
I know Chris.
Says, what is your ultimate vision for the C-Squared podcast? Do you have any sort of plan, or are you guys just taking it day by day? And he says, so far, the content has been gold.
Yeah. I mean, again, so far, I would say we're taking it day by day, but at the same time, we are committed to it. We're also just very fresh. We were learning. We don't know exactly what we have to focus on, what to improve. We're still kind of learning the ins and outs of podcasting. Where to upload, when to upload, what channels to distribute your content through. So these are all still question marks for us for the moment. But obviously, we're getting also better at it. So that's actually part of, I think, why we both enjoy it so much, because there's new things that we're learning and that keep us engaged. It's always fun to learn new things. It's always fun to do things that you're not that good at and get better at. So I think this process has been something that we were focusing on and we've both enjoyed. As to the final vision, I mean, we want to grow it as much as possible. We want to reach an audience and introduce new people through the stories that we present to the world of chess. And I feel that's a market that's been expanding, especially in the last few years. And there's always new people coming into the world of chess and new fans that maybe don't know all the things that we know since we've been in the chess world for like 20, 30 years. Maybe they don't know who, I'm sure they don't know who Yasser Seirawan is, but maybe they don't know his stories that well. Maybe they don't know Levon Aronian as personally. So maybe they don't know Judith Polgar because, you know, she retired and they don't know her as personally. As maybe we can introduce them to her or to other guests. So that's the vision. Just introduce new people to the people of chess.
Excellent. Well, again, quite impressed with it. And you say you guys are new and learning, but you guys are both quite good. You do a great job facilitating the conversation. And obviously, you've had a fascinating career in your own right, as we've discussed in our prior interview. And you touch on C-Squared. But Fabiano, I mean, as you mentioned, his commentary on the last World Championship was excellent. As I told him when I interviewed him, it took me by surprise a little bit. I mean, everyone knows he's a brilliant guy. It's not that. But not everyone has the facility for sort of cutting through the fat and really explaining complicated chess positions. He did an amazing job at that. And now I'm equally impressed with how forthcoming he's being on the podcast. I mean, stuff like when you guys, in your episode with Jordan Van Forest and Anish Giri. I mean, first of all, the perspective that Fabiano provided on how his partnership with Grandmaster Kazymjanov ended. I mean, that's something you're not going to get anywhere else. And then to hear like Anish Giri and Jordan discuss their own personal history and the ups and downs of it. Like it's just incredible perspective. So that's basically just me praising you guys. But my question for you, Christian, is do you feel like for Fabiano to be as forthcoming as he is that something that's taken prodding, or is that just come naturally to him once you actually do get him in front of the mic?
I think once you get him in front of the mic, it comes naturally to him. I think perhaps he wasn't aware of where he stands in that regard previous to the World Championship match that he commentated. But after that, after exposing his views, his knowledge of chess to a wider audience and receiving such a positive feedback, I think that was definitely a trigger for him and a catalyst for him to kind of make him open up. And I mean, in general, he is a very open guy. I knew that before because I've been hanging around with him for a very long time. But those attributes, let's say, shine through nowadays through the podcast, I want to say. And I'm happy to see that the world is enjoying it as well.
Yeah. And we had another good question from a Patreon sub. This one is from Andre Develd, and it's related to this topic. He says he's wondering if you guys, you, Christian, and Fabiano, are afraid to combine friendship and work. What if being part of the team, part of Team Caruana, somehow ended up as it did with his former second, again, referring to Kazymjanov? So are you guys afraid that the chances are high that at the end of you being part of the small team, it could affect your friendship in a in a negative way?
Yeah, I mean, those are always questions that you don't know the answer to until it happens, if it happens, right?
Right.
So, yeah, sure. I mean, our working relationship after 2019 didn't continue for a few years. We just recently started once again working a little bit in tournaments as well. I've been helping him with during the Singfield Cup, for example, and then during the recent Tata Steel as well. So we've resumed that, but yes, there was a gap in our collaboration as a second. Now, when it comes to the podcast, obviously this is a business that we are both working on. We are both kind of collaborators with equal rights. So at any point it can happen that there's going to be quarrels and things of that nature. I hope that's not going to be the case, but you can never not have that in the back, let's say, not have that in the back of your mind, or be surprised by it. But I mean, we're good friends. We've known each other for a very long time. I don't foresee that happening, and I hope it certainly doesn't. And I don't think that thinking about it should stop you from, entering in this type of partnerships.
Yeah, and you've got double.
That's always an option. Yeah, right. that can always happen. Nobody knows, right?
Yeah, but you guys both seem, at least from the outside looking in, fairly easygoing. But Christian, you're taking like double the risk because, you know, there's the old sort of received advice about like the potential challenges of having like a working collaboration with your romantic partner, and you've got your fiance in there as well. So.
Yeah, that one is she just wanted to help at the beginning. Take it off the ground. Now I kind of shadowed her as well as she was getting all these things ready. So now I kind of know how to do it as well. She doesn't have to travel with us all the time. She usually just comes whenever we are in St. Louis. But yes, I mean, this type of I feel like we should use our resources as much as possible. Yeah. if they are available to us. And she was very, very happy to help. We appreciate her and everybody on the team for sure.
Nice. And congrats on getting engaged, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have a wedding date or?
soon to be married. Yes, yes, yes. It is going to happen this year.
Okay. Well, congrats. Good luck with all the planning. That's that's even more fun than podcast coordinating.
Yeah.
Speaking from experience, but let's bring it back to the chess, Christian. So we mentioned Fabiano's commentary on the World Championship team. We've got the next World Championship coming up. I can't believe it's like a month out. By the time this comes out. Are you guys planning some coverage on that? Have you got that? Have you planned that far ahead?
No.
Yeah,
no,
me either.
we haven't planned that far ahead, and I cannot tell you for sure whether we're going to do anything or not. Whether Fabiano is going to do anything or not by himself, we don't know right now. I have to say it's quite unlikely, just for the simple fact that it's in Kazakhstan. It's going to be 3 a.m. for for me. I'm not 100% sure what weekend. We don't have that much experience. At least our channel is, let's say, not advertised or built as a streaming channel, but rather just a podcasting channel. So branching out, maybe that's an opportunity, but we haven't really given it too much thought.
But I'm sure you'll be discussing the match on the pod.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. No. Absolutely. Now the question is whether we're going to do live coverage or something like that, or like a recap after the game. But certainly, yeah, the World Championship match is going to be interesting.
Who do you think is going to win?
it's such a 50-50 match, in my opinion. Nepo has the experience, definitely. I also think he has the drive. He sensed and he felt the way defeat feels, and that can take a lot out of you, but it also changes you as a competitor, I feel. And when you're given a second chance, I think he's going to have an upper hand because of that. Because he felt how defeat feels, and he knows how close he is right now to potentially becoming the world chess champion. So I think Nepo goes into this one as the favorite, but only a very, very slight favorite. I would want to say 55-45.
Okay. Yeah, I more or less agree. I definitely favor, I mean, not on a personal sense, but just from a handicapping perspective, I do think experience matters.
Huge. It's huge. The World Championship match is such a grueling experience. And I know this from a seconds perspective. And I'm sure it's twice, three times as grueling from a participant's perspective. The amount of pressure that you're feeling, and anything can go wrong. Yeah. And you know, you don't know how to prepare for those things if you don't have experience. A lot of things can go wrong. I think Nepo probably has a more established team. I'm very curious to see what Ding's team is going to be looking like. I know he's very much a lone wolf in general. Yeah. He doesn't really work with a lot of other people. Maybe a few of his compatriots here and there, but I have never seen him travel with anybody, in fact. Only recently at Tata Steel, I think he was alone. I haven't seen anybody with him. So, with all the travel restrictions as well, which have eased up a little bit since last year, but still, it's not clear how his team is going to look like, and how Ding himself is going to look like, and how his preparation is going to look like going into this one.
Yeah, it's all kind of shrouded in mystery. I feel like it's often that way surrounding Ding, and doesn't instill
Nepo as well right now. We don't know much about his team going into this World Championship either. We don't know much about his preparation even going into this.
Yeah,
much. Exactly. There hasn't been much coverage, right?
Right. But I'm saying there's a history of institutional support for Nepo. There's a history of big teams and supercomputers. I mean, obviously the geopolitical situation, unfortunately, has gotten worse in Russia.
Yes.
So we don't know for sure that he will have that kind of support again. But comparing that to sort of the general lack of support that seems to be coming from China, I think it seems more probable to me than that Nepo has a big team and substantial resources behind him than that Deng does. But you're right, we don't know.
Yeah. No, I tend, at least instinctually, I tend to agree with that, and that's why I favor it. I'm favoring Nepo. But again, it's a world championship match. A game can sway the result and can sway the dynamics of a match. So yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, as any world championship match is.
Yeah, and you mentioned, of course, working on as a second. Was that more stressful than playing in a tournament yourself? Equal?
Oh, yeah.
Less?
Oh yeah, no. Way more stressful than playing in the random 2,500 events I'm playing.
What about like a World Youth Championship though? Like something that really mattered to you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have too many worries when I was that age, when I was 16, 18, whatever. Those were the times when I didn't have too many problems on. Not that I have any problems right now, but you know, I mean, life as an adult, let's say, gets more complicated. But yeah, it's not even comparable. The World Championship match. Immediately after, I realized that I'm starting to have gray hair. So immediately after, and I was like completely shocked by it. Did not expect it, but yes, it's definitely grueling. You dedicate so many months of your time. I think I spent maybe at home 2 to 3 months, and. I guess through this medium, I have to say thank you to my fiance that she, she was able to deal with that because it's not an easy thing to do. I was gone. I think my longest in preparation for that match was 3 months consecutively. We went at the camp, then maybe we stayed like a couple of days at home, then we traveled to Europe for I believe it was the Olympiad, and then immediately a camp, which was the longest camp. And it was 3 months from that particular moment to the end of the match that I didn't see her. So yeah, it's grueling, especially if you have a family behind you.
Yeah, that's tough. And then when the games are going on, I've interviewed some seconds where they say like their biggest fear is like something from their own prep showing up and going wrong. Is that how it was for you?
Yeah. No, it's a painful experience for sure, because especially when one of the games or one of the positions that you've analyzed arises on the board, then you start having these conflicting thoughts. Maybe it's going to work out, but also maybe I missed something.
Right.
Especially when the opponent blitzes out or like goes straight into it with confidence, and then you start questioning, wait, did we miss something in the preparation? So those definitely are interesting feelings for sure. Very conflicting feelings for sure. And you know, sometimes if the player wins, it goes great and everybody's happy. If the player loses, then the mood can be very daunting.
And did you have any stories you can tell about your own particular prep in 2018?
I mean, we all did. I would say the most prep that was played and the type of positions that we entered were in the rapid match, especially.
Oh man, that's doubly stressful.
it was obviously stressful, and it wasn't very pleasant, because even if the opening phase went well, the middle game phase did not go very, very well, and unfortunately we know what happened in the rapid portion. But yeah, those I would say the Shveshnikov was a big one that I was working on without giving too much detail. I worked on some Petrov as well, and the Petrov went well. Funny enough, I think it was a few months after the World Championship match that Fabiano found a hole in one of the lines that I was looking at. And
oh, wow.
But that was just only months later with stronger engines. But yes, luckily, they didn't find that hole during the match.
Okay. And we've got another listener question. Christian, you're a popular guy. So we got some good questions submitted. This one is from Roy Lopes, who asks, he says, reflecting on the 2018 WCC, Fabiano came tantalizingly close to the title. According to your recollection, were there moments during the match in which you thought Fabiano was going to break the deadlock? If so, could you elaborate on those games?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was. I'm trying to remember what the number of the game. I think it was maybe game 4 and 6 or game 6 and 8. I remember it was. I believe two difference. One of them is it was with White in the Shveshnikov. I think the first one when we uncorked a nice novelty, and he got a crushing position, and then he lost a very important tempo with the move H3. Fabiano was White. He played this move H3, and that kind of blew away the advantage. That was a difficult one because we knew we got him. In that variation, we knew we surprised him. It was a very powerful opening idea. It was Dominguez, in fact, that found that. Dominguez was in St. Louis, so he sent that idea overnight. We continued analyzing it during the day. I was with Rustam in London and with Fabiano, and we decided to play it, and it was a very, very good idea. In this 95 Shveshnikov, which worked, gave him a great position. Unfortunately, that very I'm trying to find. Let's say it was a shy move. This move H3 that basically just slightly improved the position, but lost a critical tempo that allowed Black to regroup his pieces. So that was painful. And then. It was in the game, I believe it was game 6, where he was Black in the Petrov. And he got a great end game, outplayed Magnus. And this was actually one of the key findings and key takeaways from this match. Fabiano held his own in the end game phase and in those last couple of hours phase, which were always like, yeah, Magnus, that's when he outplays his opponents. Because he has great stamina, great energy in those last couple of hours of gameplay, and he's very resilient. Well, Fabiano matched those attributes during the match very, very well. So we were happy with that. And he was able to almost win with the black pieces. If you remember, it was some sort of a computer win. In like 64 moves or something that.
Was that the study like one?
It was a study like, yes. I mean, it was a study like defense to get to that point for Magnus. Right. So just an incredible defense by Magnus once he understood his worst. And then unfortunately, he did not find the pattern necessary to convert that one Fabiano, that is. And the game ended in a draw. So those were the good moments for us. At the same time, the reverse of the coin is the first game, in which Fabi with the white pieces got surprised. Magnus, incredible preparation, came with his showed the Shveshnikov his preparation for the match, and he got a winning advantage. And right before the time travel, actually right on move 40, I think he blew it. Luckily for me, the first day was the only day that I was able to take a nap during the round. So I missed the part where he was completely losing.
Nice. Right.
And then I woke up immediately after the time trouble, and he was doing just fine.
All right.
He finally equalized. So I didn't go through this whole roller coaster of emotions in that one. And of course, the last game was very intriguing as well, because obviously we were trying as much as possible to finish the match before the rapid portion. We didn't want to go that much into the rapid. We knew that we're going, I mean, we knew that that's a possibility, going all the way to like the middle of the match. We understood that this is going to be a very tightly contested match, and there's a very high likelihood that we're going to go into the rapid tie breaks. But we were definitely trying to put as much pressure and not go there, especially when we had the white pieces. So he had the white pieces in the last one. Magnus just decided to make a draw from what some said was a winning position. Obviously, they didn't have engines in front of them. I think the engine was showing something along the lines of minus 1.5, something along those lines. You know, Gary came out and said that Magnus maybe doesn't have it anymore, the mental resilience that he once had. But we understood it was a calculated decision by Magnus, and he wanted to just have four games to decide the match rather than one game to decide the match. But we were also elated because we knew that he was worse. I did not expect the game to finish as soon as it finished. And when I saw that they shook hands and decided to call it a draw, I had to run from my hotel because I was the one usually tasked with waiting for Fabi to come out of the match and go to the press conference and then go together back to the hotel. So I had to run from our hotel to like catch him and just in time to go back to the hotel. But yeah, we were elated. We were happy that no accidents happened in the last one. But yeah, unfortunately, after that, the rapid came about.
Amazing behind the scenes perspective. And Christian, hearing you talk about being in London, that's another thing where I've been lucky to hear stories from like Peter Hein Nielsen being, you know, famously telling the story. And I think this is covered in the Anon files of like being in Moscow and like not even realizing they're right across the street from Red Square because like they never opened the curtain of their hotel window. What was life like for you in London? Like how much, I'm sure you're trying to sort of protect Fabiano from like any media maelstrom, any sort of, Monday morning quarterbacking that you might hear if you get online. But what was it like for the seconds? Are you watching game recaps? Are you reading news stories about the match? Or do you try to sort of sequester yourself as well?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's impossible to stay completely away from it. But at the same time, the focus was on one thing and one goal only. And we had to maintain that. So I would say the most difficult was actually the physical aspect of it. Just going through 3 weeks, and we came into this very well prepared, I want to say, from that perspective. We were eating well. We had a camp in Spain leading up to the World Championship match. We were getting a lot of sun, getting a lot of workouts in. So physically, we came very well prepared into the match. But, you know, you get to London. The weather is not amazing. One thing we didn't have was a chef with us that Magnus always brings. And I think it's something that's extremely, extremely important. And I'm sure if there's ever an opportunity to do this again, that's one thing that we will not sweep under the rug, the necessity for having somebody that can cook you healthy meals. I think that's quite important. So, you know, we were going, we found a few restaurants, not a lot of diversity because you have to optimize your timing as well. You don't have a lot of time to eat three meals a day when you have so much preparation to do and then when you have to play a match. Yeah, those were, I would say, the hard parts. Were we seeing sun? Yeah, I mean, we were seeing quite a lot of sun. I mean, the workflow was good. The workflow was definitely good. It was not something that we struggled very much with. Sure, maybe we were sleeping 5-6 hours a night, which it proved to be enough. By the end of it, I had some problems with my back. So, you know, from sitting so much in front of the computer, not moving as much. But yeah, I mean, those are the drawbacks of playing such a grueling match.
Sounds like a terrible experience, and I'm guessing you'd do it again if you had the opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's conflicting emotions. Let's just put it that way. It's always conflicting emotions. As you are into it, it's very easy to run on adrenaline. I think this is what we ran on for whatever the match duration was, like 3 weeks or something along those lines. You do run on adrenaline. By the end of it, after the last day, my body actually collapsed. I had a drink after that night, after the loss. I had like a half a glass of whiskey or something like that.
That was your first drink the whole match?
That was my first drink in like a long, long time. Yeah. We didn't drink anything in preparation or anything of that. Not even like a beer. So we were pretty serious about it. But after the match ended, the adrenaline just rushed through the body, you know, and that was it. That was a total collapse that night. I had colds, cold sweats during the night. I barely made it to my flight, and Fabi was actually in the same condition as I was. So, and I'm sure he can elaborate more on that if he wants to. But yeah, there were some physical problems, especially towards the end of it.
Sounds intense. And hearing you describe it, of course, it makes a bit of sense to me why Magnus stepped down. I mean, it's quite the meat grinder.
It is. It is. Yeah. No, I understand his decision. It's really tough.
Yeah. And we have another related listener question. This one's from Chris Burke. And he says, as a player, but mostly a fan, the shorter time controls are much, all capital, much more accessible and enjoyable. But he'd like to know where you see the future of chess in 10 years. Do you think the trend will continue to more rapid blitz and 960? And then he says, by the way, the C Squared podcast is really a treat every time it drops.
Yeah. I don't see how it doesn't become more part of the equation of chess. The spectators enjoy it more, it feels like, even though the tension that builds up during a long, long game, especially when the stakes are high, that also doesn't feel, at least by the numbers, to be, it's quite unmatched. Like, yeah. If you look at the numbers of a world championship match, they're pretty much the highest. At the same time, when you see the numbers of a match between Magnus and Hikaru, also it's jaw-dropping, right? So it's driven by the spectators. It's also driven by the players. The players enjoy it more. The players enjoy rapid and blitz more. They seem to want to compete more in that format, as well as online chess, because they can do it from the comfort of their homes. They don't have to travel. If they have a family, they don't have to miss days at home. So I see a lot of factors that are driving chess into that shape. At the same time, I hope that classical chess is not going to be completely phased out, because it does have its particular appeal. You know, it's very tense. There's a build up that you don't have when you watch rapid and blitz games. You can work with that. as sponsors, as broadcasters, as platforms that want to, and as players as well. You can work with that. But yes, I think at best for classical chess, we're going to see something along the lines of 80% from in 10 years from now, 80% Rapid and Blitz, and maybe 20% classical chess. And one thing about classical chess, it cannot be played online.
Right.
So that's a big drawback for classical chess. You cannot play classical chess online. It's just impossible. I mean, you're going to have to go to the bathroom every now and then. There's going to always be questions. What is he doing in the bathroom? Nobody can, you know, you're in the comfort of your home. If somebody starts playing too well, then there's always going to be the lingering questions. What was happening during those bathroom breaks? We cannot see the whole room with the cameras. These type of questions. So, yeah, the classical chess only face to face, which has a particular appeal as well. But as we move on into this digital age, I would say it will take a seat back for sure.
Yeah, I mean, proctored classical chess is of course possible, where you have representatives, say from chess.com, at the facility of each competitor. But yeah, when you're playing a slow game, I sort of feel like kind of defeats the purpose.
You know? Defeats the purpose. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And broadly, I agree with you. I always see them in the comments and get emails, so I always do feel compelled to say, I know the classical chess fans are out there, you know, and I'm not necessarily saying I disagree with you. I mean, something like the tenseness of the game six between Magnus and Nepo, like it's tough to match in an online game. But you know, we all have to make trade-offs in life, and I think the benefits of online overall outweigh the detriments. But hopefully the classical world championship can continue in some form.
That's key. I think the classical world chess championship, and it's a pity from that perspective, it's a pity that Magnus doesn't play it anymore, because it's not going to be the same. Let's be honest about it. It's not going to be the same. You don't have Magnus in a world championship match with everybody knowing that right now, objectively, he is the best player on the planet. The world championship match is going to have an asterisk next to it. And we're going to have to wait and see what the impact of that will be on the audience, on the spectators, on a global audience that will be tuning in. So we will compare those numbers and see exactly where we stand, and see whether classical chess without such a player like Magnus has a future in the near term.
Yeah, we will see. But speaking of classical chess, Christian, you yourself made a somewhat rare return to the chessboard in November of last year. How was that experience?
Triumphant return, I want to say.
Triumphant? You had your own. Yeah, you did pretty well.
No. It was definitely necessary. I really wanted to play. I mean, being on the sidelines for 3 years, I would have never expected it. If you would have asked me in like 2016, 2017, 2018, whether I will ever have like a break in the next 20 years of more than a few months of not playing chess, I would say no, absolutely not. And then, you know, the pandemic came, the job got in the way, on some degree. It became more and more difficult to find time to play myself. And once I got the opportunity to play in this spring classic, you know, the St. Louis Chess Club is one place that I really enjoy playing. They make chess professionals and chess players, even if they're like 2500s and not like 2800s, they make them feel like celebrities and professionals. They respect the craft. So it's always a pleasure to play there. And that's why I wanted to return there at the St. Louis Chess Club. Also, in the U.S., for the most part, the open events are 2 rounds a day, which is something that I really despise. But
yeah,
that's
tough.
That's just because I got too comfortable. That's also my mistake. I got too comfortable. You know, I really don't enjoy it. And I know that chess playing is not like my main career, let's say, right? Mm. That's now not how I make a living. So, you know, whenever I do it, I try to enjoy it. I went there. I started off horrendously. I think I lost the first one. I barely escaped the second one. I was 2 points down in the end game against a Hungarian player that just moved to the US to attend college at Webster. I'm trying to remember. Kantor, Gergely Kantor, 25-70 something. Very decent player. With the white pieces, I tried the Scotch, didn't go well, and I got a losing position. Managed to save it, and that kind of turned the event, because after that I lost another one. Yeah, I lost in round three against Christopher Yu with the black, an amazing player, but after that I started righting the ship, and I felt that my game is sort of coming back. I was confident despite the result. I was preparing well. I was, giving enough time to preparation, choosing the right openings. I was having ideas as to where to look and what to choose in terms of openings. So that's very important as well, because when you don't have ideas, you kind of struggle with that and it can become tedious. But I had that energy that you have whenever you don't do something for a very long time that you enjoy. And then, right. You know, if you do it too much, then it becomes too much like a job. If you don't do it for a very long time, you have that appetite for it as well. So I had that appetite, and that helped stir the ship back, finished on plus one. Very good final game against Lenderman with the black pieces. Very happy with the result.
Yeah, Lenderman's strong. So
won the tournament with, I think, 1 or 2 rounds to spare. So by the time I played him, he already won the tournament.
And when you're ramping back up, I mean, that was your first tournament in 3 years. As you mentioned, if you had asked me in 2016, 2017, and 2019, I did ask you in 2017, and you talked about wanting to reach 2,600. Obviously, no one foresaw the pandemic. I mean, life gets in the way. But when you're ramping up for a tournament, Christian, did you have time to study much? Like, how did you approach it going in?
No, I didn't study much at all. But I do study on a continuous basis because of my students at the university. They're most of them are better than I am in terms of chess ability. So I have to get quite creative when I'm preparing materials for them. I very often compete with them during trainings as well. Sometimes I get to play games, practice games with them. We play positions together. So despite the fact that I haven't played, I was still training on a continuous basis. And I think that's actually quite important for that a chess player in general. You want to continuously practice it. Even if you practice it for like 1-2 hours a day, maybe not the touted 6 to 8 hours a day. But if you do it continuously, I think your game definitely improves. I felt that was the case with me, despite the fact that I didn't have that competitive aspect to back it up. And sure, the first couple of games were rough, but as soon as that competitive spirit kind of came back, I felt that my play was good enough.
And Christian, that's a perfect segue into our last question from David Lazarus, which is, I think you just answered it, but what is your primary role as the coach of the University of Missouri?
Yeah, so we started the program in 2019. It was an initiative backed by the St. Louis Chess Club. So it's kind of like an equal effort of the St. Louis Chess Club and the University of Missouri. My primary goal is as a head coach and manager of the team. So initially, in the first year, it was recruiting, because we were a new program, and all the established programs recruit on a year-by-year basis. They never stop. So it's the chess world is very small, and especially the chess world and the chess pool of players that are ready for university and are good enough to receive a full ride scholarship at one of these competitive universities. So the first year, I want to say, was the most difficult one as a manager, because I had to find very quickly four players. That's what we need for a full Pan American team to compete at the Pan Americans, which is one of the most important tournaments of the collegiate year. So first year was difficult recruiting. Luckily, we managed to get a very decent bunch of players. One of them right now is the highest rated player in collegiate chess, so I cannot complain too much. Talking about Grigory Oparin, who is one of the founding members, let's say, of our team. But yeah, outside of that, my role is to just coach them, coach and manage them, and manage this very crucial transition for a chess player, but also for a young player. Right, because most of the players that we have at the university are between the age of 18 and 20 something, 21, 22. And that's a very crucial transition. Most of them are also international, so they have to change cultures, change location, sometimes leave their families behind for a prolonged period of time, which is not an easy task to do. I've done that myself, so I feel that this kind of plays into my role as well, the fact that I have the experience necessary to tell them, hey, look, this is, you know, this is a difficult time, but here is how you deal with it. So those are my main tasks, coaching them on a weekly weekly basis, continuous basis, and help them with the transition from a managerial point of view.
Makes sense. And for someone like Oparin, who's so strong, like, what do you do in terms of helping his chess?
Yeah, I mean, all the coaching that we do, I feel, help, no matter if you're like 23, 2400 or 26, 2700. The materials that I prepare are for very high ratings, very high capabilities. So they're not having an easy time during training, for sure. I think that's quite important. We also have individual trainings outside of group trainings that we often do. We also have individual trainings, which I think are quite important. That gives me a time and an opportunity to assess how they're doing from an individual point of view, whether they're having good time in terms of their chess training and chess form, whether they're doing well in school, because a lot of things can impact the quality of their play. School problems at home, problems with other colleagues, who knows, anything that's going on in their lives. And those things are things that I have to assess whenever we have these individual trainings as well. So, but what I can do for him and what I've been doing for the last 4 years are, yeah, just keeping a close eye on his training, directing his training. He does a lot of things on his own as well. He's a very diligent player, and this is something that I try to teach them how to do. I try to teach them to be good on their own as well, because I don't have the time necessary to spend with each individually all the time. I sometimes am gone for a commentary gig for like 3 weeks at a time, and then they have to deal with it, deal with, let's say, a competition that is coming up for them on their own. Sometimes, for example, during the Grand Suisse with Oparin, I worked as more or less a second, even though he wasn't representing the Mizu team. I worked with him as a second. The competition being in Europe, I was generally speaking with him during the day here, and when it was night at him, and then doing work for him while he was sleeping, and then he was basically checking whatever work we did when he was waking up. So yeah, those are some of the things that we do on a continuous basis to try to get the players better.
Sounds like a lot of work, but it's good that they're understanding of your own schedule, that you'll be away at times.
Oh, yeah. It's good that they understand, and it's good that the university and the St. Lucia's Club understands that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, perhaps just as important. And speaking of St. Louis, Christian, the last topic I have in mind is, of course, an unfortunate one. Both on Perpetual Chess, I mentioned briefly in a prior episode, and I know you guys covered on C-Squared, the allegations around Alejandro Ramirez. Just for listeners who are not familiar, I think most will be, but basically Jen Shahadi put out a statement saying that there are allegations of she herself alleged sexual misconduct, and she said she'd independently received reports of sexual misconduct. And then once it came out, she elaborated that she'd heard from even more people. The U.S. Chess issued a statement. They said, as an organization, we're committed to due process and for dealing with sensitive matters in a respectful and confidential manner. At the conclusion of any process related to a formal complaint, both complainants and respondents are notified about the disposition of the matter, along with sanctions that are imposed. St. Louis Chess Clubs had a statement that said, the Chess Club is aware of Ms. Shahadi's social media post regarding Mr. Ramirez. It cannot comment further at this time. Grandmaster Ramirez's lawyer said that he categorically denies the allegations. So I know there's not too much we can say. It's a sensitive topic, both parties involved. But I am just curious, Christian, if you're able to answer, like, did you know this was coming at all?
No. I did not know that it was coming. I see a lot of things being written that this was some sort of a dark secret in inside the chess world that it was known about Alejandro. I didn't know that about Alejandro. I have not seen those type of things with my own eyes. And I've also had students, personal students that have trained with him as well. For example, the board one at the Olympic U.S. Olympic team is a current student at Mizzou, and none of these concerns were brought to my attention. And I hope, and I like to think that if there would have been something, it would have been brought to my attention. So I did not know that. It was a complete shock. It still is, to be honest. This is very personal to me as well. In some capacity, of course, my sympathies are definitely with the alleged victims, and this is very, very important to understand that sexual assault is huge, and it has to be dealt with swiftly and decisively. So, but at the same time, I feel there has to be due process, and we have to wait until we have all the information available, and the parties that are conducting investigations right now finish those investigations. I think that's quite important. That's why we chose on CSQ to not delve deeper into this very unpleasant topic. Those are, I would say, some of my comments.
Okay. Yeah. And obviously, there's legal issues involved. So I appreciate your speaking about it. And yeah, I mean, obviously the main thing I think that we all want is for the truth to come out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is the most important. Again, it's a very sensitive and very important topic as well. It should be dealt with it very, very swiftly. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Christian, I'm sorry to end on a somber note. Let's find something brighter to end on. Do you have a, so we were just discussing OTB, any other tournaments on your calendar?
I just accepted an invitation to play in Sharjah Masters, which is going happen in May. I think it will be one day after the conclusion of the GCT Romania, which I will be doing commentary for in Bucharest. So immediately after, probably I will fly to Sharjah. Still unclear, but those are the plans right now.
That's
which
a
is
serious
going to be
tournament.
A very, very, whew, very serious. Only 80 players in the Masters section, and it's only over 2,500. So I will be facing killers left and right. It's basically like a closed event in the disguise of an open. You play only grandmasters, very professional players all around. Two of my students most likely will be playing. I think Grigory Oparin is going to be playing. Perhaps Harshid Raja is trying to get in, but he's 2498 right now. He still needs two more rating points to make it to that 2500 threshold. But hopefully he makes it, and perhaps he will be playing as well. So that's the only one as of right now that I have on my calendar.
Okay, well, it's a big one. We certainly wish you luck in that. So you've got that. You've got the commentary gig in Romania. Anything else? Getting married? Anything else major on the calendar?
It's a busy year. Between the podcast, the American Cup is just about to start. I will be doing commentary on that one as well. So I haven't done commentary in a while, so getting back into the booth, I think, is going to be an interesting experience. But it's always a pleasure to do so. So that's the big one. That's the next big one, American Cup, which starts in a couple of weeks from now, March 14 or 15, something along those lines. And yeah, after that, April is the World Championship match, to which I don't think we will be doing anything in particular, but definitely keep an eye on the channel, on the CSQ channel, because we will be doing some recaps most likely. So yeah, those are the things as of
okay
right.
Well, glad to hear it, listeners. You guys probably already know, but check out C Squared on the podcast apps as well as on YouTube, where they're killing it. And Christian, hearing how busy you are makes me all the more appreciative. Thanks for taking the time. It was good to catch up after several years.
Yeah, always a pleasure to come back and chat with you, Ben. And once again, congratulations to you and your listeners who have been supporting you from day one. I mean, it's a great endeavor you're doing. You're putting incredible content out there, and yeah, I wish you all the energy to maintain it and keep it up.
Right back at you, Christian. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.